Welcome. Today I have the great honor of doing an interview with the president of the RCMI, Dr. Michael Hoare. Dr. Hoare, I'd like to start off by taking this time to thank you for doing this interview and for taking the time out of your busy schedule to meet with me today.
My pleasure, Magdalene.
Dr. Hoare, I'd like to start off by having you tell us more about yourself along with the work that you do as the president of the RCMI.
I'll be glad to do that. I think this is a fantastic institution. And just to explain, you mentioned RCMI, and that, of course, is short for the Royal Canadian Military Institute. So it's a very proud title with a long history. We've been around for, we're in our 126th year, created in 1890 by Colonel Otter, and originally it was to help some sort of higher and broader education for Army officers. Since then, of course, it's developed in many different ways, and of course we have Air Force and Navy officers who are an integral part of the organization, but it also is also open to any interested citizen individual. You don't have to have a military background, but obviously that's an important part of our heritage and the kinds of things that we do. I became president not too long ago on June the 14th, having been on the executive committee for quite some time and a member for considerable time. To be the president of RCMI is a distinct honor in my assessment. And initially, when I looked at being vice president and naturally progressing to the president, I had to have a serious discussion with my wife as to whether I could even become the president, because I live a significantly distance away. I live in London. And when I became president, I lived in Grand Bend, which is a small beach town north of London. I have since moved back to London, and I've lived in Grand Bend for 20 years. So that puts me close to the train station, which allows me to get more easily to downtown Toronto and then the subway up here. So I've had part of that move is to allow me to fulfill my obligations of the president in a better way. There is lots to do. There's always a lot to do, especially if you're new and you're keen and you're motivated. And I have to tell you that I'm all of those.
You certainly are. And I want to say that as a result of being affiliated with the NATO Association of Canada, I want to thank you on behalf of the association for providing all of our interns, our program editors, and research analysts at the association with an opportunity to utilize some of the resources that you have available here, such as the library at the RCMI. In addition, I want to thank you for providing all of our students with an opportunity to have a tour of the RCMI. That is something that we greatly appreciate. And now, as the current project coordinator and former program editor of the Global Horizons program, I oftentimes focus on reaching out to our youth. And for all of the young professionals and listeners tuning in to this interview today, can you tell us more about some of the most rewarding aspects and challenges associated with the work that you do as the president of the RCMI?
Yes, always a lot to do, especially when you, you're waiting to take over. And when you're not the president and you're a vice president, essentially you have to defer to the president, even though there's a certain amount of cooperation and teamwork. But individuals have their own priorities and their particular strengths and skill sets that need to be applied. As it stands right now, and I'll start off with, unfortunately, on a slightly negative note, we, as you know, replaced the 100-plus-year-old building at 426 University, and for 4 years we're temporary members of the Albany Club, and we now are in this beautiful new facility, which is the first six floors of 426 University Avenue, with condominiums on the top of us for 34 floors, I think it is. We are not condominium. We own outright our floors. and it is a beautiful organization. I'm giving you this background because you don't end up doing those things without having some financial challenges. In terms of the actual building itself, that pretty much helped itself in terms of our sourcing and the money we had and our assets and so on. But when you have not really been in your own building for 4 years, and then you have to start, it's virtually like starting the business up again, like a new business. And so we had our challenges to now, you know, be known again, that we are open, and having people come down and getting our revenues up and so on. The unfortunate thing was about a year ago, October, we were just reaching the peak of our, you know, high production, and we had a major flood in part of the organization. It was a $1.1 million damage. We then had business interruption. We lost business. So this is all not to go into too much detail, but just to say that one of the big challenges I have is financially making sure we're safe. We have some deficiencies and planning for those. I'm optimistic. We have excellent staff. We have excellent volunteers on our finance and audit committee. And we know where we have to go. And we just have to have patience, even though we're not in, you know, the most perfect financial situation. Now, having said that, you would never know that. Because when you come in here and you look around, it's a beautiful place.
It's gorgeous.
It's high-end in terms of design and furniture and service and everything else, and the quality is top-notch. So the financial thing is one important aspect that I have to deal with. The second one, which is extremely important, is membership. If you don't renew your membership, you don't have an organization, and that is a significant source, of course, of revenue. We have about 1,500 members right now. But the revenue we get from them varies, because if you're a downtown GTA member, you're able to use the Institute much more, and your rate is higher. But if we have non-resident members, which simply may never get here, I mean, we have non-resident members all over the world who want to belong for various reasons. And then we have non-resident members we have about 150 resident members that live in Ottawa, and we're doing some special outreach to them right now. That's something new that I'm doing as the president, recognizing those people who are distant from us and trying to connect. And I've tried to connect through members' news and through communication, but in particular with a large concentration of people in Ottawa. We actually have it planned in November 24th that the general manager and myself will be going down and we'll use our reciprocal club, the Rideau Club, and we'll meet with whoever comes. I mean, they all won't come, obviously. Of 150, we're sort of thinking if we get 40, we're fine. But that's good, because if they come from the area, they'll spread the word around, you know? So that's the second one, is the financial, there's the membership. And what I'm really telling you right now is our strategic goals. Another important one is becoming known as certainly as much as possible, but even immediately in the downtown Toronto area. People walk by and they look at the cannons out front, they look at the flags, and they wonder, what is that place? So we actually had a long meeting this morning with a marketing advisor. And the question is, how can we let the people know who would be interested what we are, what we have to offer, which would attract them to membership? So those are my priorities right now. There's many other bits and pieces. We all have our certain style. I think one of the things that is so easy to do is see people in person and recognize them and thank them for what they do, because this organization is very lean on staff and it's very much volunteer driven. We have many, many committees that make this place happen. All of the activities we have are committee based. you know, hundreds, thousands of hours of volunteer work put in by our members. And unfortunately, you know, it's the nature of the beast that some people would never even think twice to thank in any way the people that are doing all that work. I may have made a concerted effort to go to every committee that's here, some of which people know me, others they've never set eyes on me, and simply say, this is me, and I want you to know how important you are to the success of this place, and thank you very much on behalf of the membership. So that's a little personal kind of challenge that I have.
And on that note, I want to thank you for all of the work that you are currently doing as the president here at the RCMI, and thank you for being so generous to the NATO Association of Canada.
Delightful.
Dr. Hoare, I want to also mention that you had a diversified career as an educator and administrator in education, healthcare, and the military. You also earned a PhD in organizational psychology from the University of Toronto. With your experience and your expertise, what would you say is the best advice that you can provide to the young professionals interested in perhaps pursuing a career in psychology?
Well, that's a pretty big question, Magdalene.
And the reason why I asked this question because I have a lot of friends who are currently completing degrees in psychology. Mm-hmm. And when I ask them that question, it varies, it ranges depending on what area you decide to specialize in.
And that would be the first thing that I would say is, you know, when you say psychology, there are so many different dimensions to psychology. You know, I can say on the one hand, there is the theoretical and academic and experimental psychologist that, in my opinion, and I obviously you'll detect that I'm not too fond of that area, they're not in the real world. They're in the theoretical world, in the academic world, and what have you. And I am at the other end of the spectrum. The psychology that I like is the psychological information that one can use and apply in everyday work that you do. So that has caused me to, with a primary focus in organizational psychology, I'm interested in people in particular in the workplace, the many different organizations that people work in, which work takes up a significant part of a person's life. I also have a simple belief that we need in our life to seek as much happiness as possible and feel positive and fulfilled and enjoy this life. And if work is such a big part of it, you should find something that you really enjoy doing. And so there's two dimensions to this. I discovered when I looked at all the ranges and had exposure to all the different kind of specialization areas in psychology that I had worked in organizations, different organizations, military, hospital, educational, and so on. And there's a term, a psychological term called morale. And people talk about morale, and they talk about how, oh, morale is really terrible where I work. You know, it's just terrible. So, you know, and other people, oh, morale is really high because such and such happened. One of my primary focuses in my research was to understand morale. What was it? Or what is it? What are the factors that affect it, positively and negatively? What are the behavioral outcomes of that? How does it change attitudes? And essentially it's a feeling. Morale is a feeling. So I'm interested in human feeling as a result of their experience in the workplace in particular. But you can even generalize that to the same principles to any organizational group, even a family group, you know? So that's the kind of psychology that interests me, the applied, where you can understand, you know, when you're living your life every day, it gives you greater understanding. And then in terms of somebody hiring you as a psychologist, you are really facilitating a more productive workplace, happier employees, people, giving them a more rewarding life. And that to me is very, very positive. And then on the spectrum that I've just talked about, moving somewhere along there, there's also counseling psychology. And that's, of course, most people quite aware of what that is. It's individuals with a variety of personal issues, emotional issues, and so on, and understanding what they are, with one's ability to analyze and knowledge base, being able to help them see how they can solve their own problem. One of the fundamentals in psychology is, especially in counseling, is that you don't give the person the answer. You help them discover the answer.
In terms of the morale here at the RCMI, mm-hmm. I must say that it's high. And
yeah, the staff are very excellent, very positive, very good team.